Monique was sometimes angry, often irritable, and always tense. She yelled at Angel for spilling her milk and blamed Gerald for the toast that she had burned. At the trial, she insisted on wearing a bright red satin dress, even though Gerald and Angel told her to wear something a little more business-looking. "If that's the last Jordan's gonna see of me before you two lying devils send him away, he's gonna remember me as looking good," she exclaimed.
"We ain't lying, Mama,"
Angel tried to explain, but Monique refused to listen. She didn't want to hear it. On the first day of the court proceedings, Gerald held Angel's hand as they sat on the worn brown wooden bench in the hall outside the courtroom. Monique's high heels clicked on the polished floor as she paced back and forth. She went down the hall to the bathroom 6 times in half an hour to check her makeup and hair. No one spoke. Just as the bailiff came into the hall to call them to the courtroom, Mr. Washington turned the corner and strode toward them, smiling. Gerald looked up and grinned with pleasure and relief.
I'm surprised. Man, am I glad you're here,"
Mr. Washington replied in his deep, cheerful voice. "I figured you might need another hand to hold. Hi there, Angel." Angel looked up shyly, but did not speak. Monique, returning from still another makeup check, patted her hair and smoothed her dress as she approached the tall, well-dressed man speaking to Gerald.
"Monique, this is Darryl Washington. He's..."
Just then, the court clerk called them a second time. Gerald was relieved that he didn't have to explain to Monique exactly how Mr. Washington had helped them. Not only had he helped Gerald and Angel file the proper papers to explain to the courts exactly how Jordan had been molesting Angel, but he had also made sure a caring and understanding social worker was assigned to their case. And he had found a wonderful female counselor for Angel, someone she could talk to about the bad dreams she sometimes had and the bad feelings left over from her experiences with Jordan. Monique gave one more curious glance at Darryl Washington as she hurried into the courtroom. She left the children standing in the hall, unsure of what to do. Mr. Washington took their hands, squeezed them in assurance, and escorted them into the courtroom. Jordan sat at a table on the right side of the room, his face angry, glaring as Angel and Gerald walked into the room. Jordan's lawyer, a thin man with dirty fingernails, shuffled his papers and checked his watch frequently. Monique sat in the first row, across from Jordan, in a position where he could see her well. She smiled at him, but he didn't even look at her. On the right side of the room sat the jury. Mostly women, they looked at Angel and Gerald without smiling, but their eyes showed understanding and perhaps even a bit of sympathy. Gerald and Angel were told by the prosecutor that they would only have to answer a few questions, and then they could leave the room. She told them that neither one of them was in trouble and not to be overwhelmed or frightened by the proceedings. It was Jordan, she reminded them, that had done wrong, and he was the only one on trial. They were just witnesses. Gerald relaxed a bit and breathed in slowly. He felt stiff and uncomfortable in the tight, dark suit, and afraid of all the strangers who seemed to be controlling his life today. Angel trembled and sat close to Gerald. Mr. Washington sat in the row behind them and patted their shoulders.
"I'll be right here, kids. Just relax and tell the truth. You'll be fine."
Gerald nodded, but he felt sick and dizzy. Angel's eyes were closed, and she breathed slowly and carefully. The prosecutor, a round woman dressed all in green, including green fingernails done to match her bright green shoes, began by explaining to the jury what the charges were against Jordan, describing him as a despicable monster. She said she hated putting the children through this, but their testimony was essential. Gerald's name was called first.
"State your name, son."
"Gerald Nickleby."
"Do you understand that everything you say here must be the truth?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"What grade are you in?"
"I'm in the 6th grade at Hazelwood Middle School."
"How long have you been living with Jordan and Monique Sparks?"
2 years, ever since my Aunt Queen died.
Do you get along with your parents?
Monique is my mother, but Jordan is not my daddy. He's Monique's husband, and he says he's Angel's daddy, but he's no father of mine.
What kind of father is Jordan?
No kind. He smacks me and punches me all the time. I got cuts and bruises all over me. But that ain't the problem. I can deal with that. It's what he does to Angel that I can't stand.
Can you explain?
Gerald looked at Monique. She was looking at Jordan, whispering, "I'm sorry," across the room. Gerald looked away in disgust and glanced at Mr. Washington. He still couldn't believe that a busy man would take the time to come and be with them. Mr. Washington smiled at Gerald in encouragement. Gerald took a deep breath.
"He goes into Angel's bedroom at night. He's messing with her, and it makes me sick."
"Have you ever seen him touch her in an improper way?"
"Well, no, but I know he does."
"Did she ever tell you?"
"She was really scared, but, yeah, she told me about it finally. So I got help, and the police found him in her bedroom."
"Thank you, Gerald."
The defense lawyer asked only a few questions.
"Gerald," he began, "Mr. Sparks says you are lying. If you have never really seen him doing anything to Angel, how can you sit there and accuse him with no proof?"
"I see how scared Angel is, and I see how Jordan likes to touch her hair and put his hands on her back. I am not lying."
The lawyer shrugged, checked his watch, picked his nose, then said carelessly,
"No further questions."
Gerald sat down gratefully. When Angel's name was called, she almost fainted. Gerald walked with her and helped her sit in the witness chair.
"I'm only going to ask you a few questions, honey, okay? Don't be afraid, just tell the truth."
Angel nodded, barely able to breathe.
"Tell us your name."
"Angel Sparks."
"Do you understand that everything you say here must be the truth?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"What grade are you in?"
"Second grade."
"We're going to use this doll, okay? You just point to the doll to help you answer the questions, all right?"
Angel nodded again and hugged the doll the prosecutor gave her. She asked her about Jordan and what life was like with him. Angel whispered her answers, but she told the truth.
"Are you afraid of him?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Can you tell us why?"
"He yells."
"Is that all?"
"He hits."
"Does he hit you?"
"Sometimes. Mostly he hits Gerald and Mama."
"Does he ever hurt you?"
"Sometimes."
"How?"
Angel hesitated.
"He makes me play games."
"What kind of games?"
"Bad games."
"Can you explain what kind of bad games? I know this is hard for you, but we're almost finished."
"Touchy-feely games."
"Can you show me on the doll?"
The doll was really helpful. When the prosecutor asked Angel where Jordan had hit Gerald, for example, Angel pointed to the doll's back and face. And when she asked about where Jordan had touched her, Angel was able to use the doll to show what he had done. When the prosecutor was finished, the defense lawyer whispered to Jordan, started to get up, then sat back down.
"No questions, Your Honor."
"Thank you, Angel,"
the prosecutor in green said. "That's all. You and Gerald can leave now. You were very brave." Angel and Gerald walked out of the courtroom together. Neither looked at Jordan. Monique refused to look at them. Mr. Washington took them both to lunch, but Angel couldn't eat. It took the jury less than an hour to decide his fate that afternoon. He was found guilty on all counts, and the judge, sentencing him immediately, gave him 6 to 10 years in prison. As he was taken away, Angel finally breathed deeply. Gerald watched the door close and smiled with grim satisfaction. Finally, Jordan would be in a place where he could no longer threaten them. A caseworker was assigned to the family, and it was decided that Gerald and Angel would stay with Monique for the time being. Mr. Washington smiled at Gerald at the end of that very long day.
My boy Rob could learn quite a bit from you, Gerald. You got guts. And remember, you also have me. You call me if things start to get shaky, you hear?
I will, but we'll be fine now. I can handle Monique. She ain't like most mamas, but she's all we got. We'll do all right.
I know you will, son. I'm sure of it.
14. Angel loved to dance. She wore music like a graceful gown that shimmered as she moved. Even the simplest melody became a full concert, like a music video, when Angel danced to it. And Gerald loved to watch her as she danced in her bedroom late at night and danced in the kitchen while she was getting ready for school. In the 6 years since the arrest and conviction of Jordan Sparks, music had helped Angel to heal and grow. She never had any formal dance lessons, but she made Gerald take her to every new movie that featured dancers, and she would get up in the middle of the night to watch a rerun of an old Fred Astaire movie. Whenever Angel felt sad or guilty or afraid, music and dancing made her feel whole again. Life for Gerald and Angel continued to be rough, even after Jordan went off to jail. Monique never did admit that she was aware of Jordan's abuse, but she did stop calling the children liars. She seemed to stop caring about the children at all. Sometimes she went to work, but sometimes she just slept all day. They had moved 4 times in the last 5 years because Monique forgot to pay the rent. At other times, she forgot to buy groceries. A caseworker checked on the children occasionally, and she tried to encourage Monique so that the family could survive. Gerald learned to cook and shop with food stamps and wash clothes at the laundromat. He never complained about the difficulty of taking care of his little sister. Rather, Angel's hugs and smiles kept him going. Gerald was her warrior and protector, and she adored him. Tiger, the kitten from that terrible Christmas 6 years ago, was the fat and clever ruler of wherever they lived. She ate anything, broccoli, sweet rolls, even toothpaste. She never strayed far from Angel's side and had once jumped on a dog that growled at Angel. Angel never slept without Tiger, who was the only one there to comfort her in the darkness of the night, when old fears came creeping from the past. Angel, who was now 12, was thin and shy. She had large eyes, which sometimes were full of remembered fear. Her hair was long, brown, and fuzzy. She wore it in 2 long braids. She walked gracefully. Her movements were never quick and jerky like those of some girls her age. At 17, Gerald was tough and stocky, with the muscles of a young man who knew hard work. He was dependable and strong, and storekeepers often paid him a few dollars to move boxes or clean up after hours. Every morning, after walking Angel to her school around the corner, Gerald took the bus to Hazelwood High School. He was glad that in spite of all their moving around, he could still attend Hazelwood. He had made a couple of really good friends and was really proud that he had made the basketball team. The Hazelwood Tigers always made the high school playoffs. 2 years ago, they were first in the state. Rob's dad had called him the day after the team roster was posted. Only 15 boys had been chosen to wear the red uniforms of the Tigers varsity.
"Congratulations, Gerald. I'm proud of you, son."
Gerald wasn't sure if Rob's dad called everybody son or not, but he liked it. He'd never had a father around to call him that. "Thanks, Mr. Washington. I'm going to do my best."
"I'll be there at the games, you know. Let me know if you ever need a ride."
"Thanks, man."
Rob's dad never asked directly how things were with Gerald and Angel, but he called every few months, talking of school or baseball or the weather, letting Gerald know that he was around, just in case. Gerald never told him, but those calls meant so very much. Every year at Christmas, Mr. Washington always made sure that Angel and Gerald had something special under their tree. One year, he even provided the tree as well. Often after basketball practice, Rob and his dad gave Gerald a ride home so that he wouldn't have to take the bus. Rob, with his natural grace and ability, was already talking of college scholarships and NBA contracts. He treated everybody as if they were his best friend, but he generally hung with Andy and Gerald and a couple of other guys from the team, Tyrone and BJ. The basketball season had started well. They had won their first couple of games. Gerald actually looked forward to school. And even though most 17-year-olds would rather gag than admit they liked their little sister, he let Angel tag along when she wanted, and looked forward to her cheerful smile to warm the chilly evenings at home after school. Gerald and Angel stood at the kitchen sink together, the sunlight of a November day filtering weakly through the small window. She was washing, he was drying. The silences between them were pleasant and understood. Angel spoke first. "When is Mama coming home?" "It's always hard to tell. If she got that new job, she might be real late."
"Do you think she'll let me take that dance class?"
"If she got the job, she'll be in a good mood. Ask her then."
"Gerald, you got basketball and sports and stuff. I got nothing but the music inside of me. I want to dance."
"Hey, the man at the chicken place around the corner said he'd let me wash dishes after school. I could get paid for what I'm doing here," he said, laughing. "Then you could take the dance class."
"Nah, Gerald, you stay on the team. You can't quit basketball.
I think you like running around in your underwear," she replied. Gerald grinned and flicked soapy water at her. She squealed and giggled, dipped her hands in the sink, and shook her drippy fingers at his face. Gerald laughed, ducked, and just as he was chasing Angel around the kitchen with a full glass of water, Monique breezed inside with a burst of winter air.
"Ooh," she exclaimed, "it's a freezer out there. How's my babies? And what's this water doing all over the floor?"
Monique had not changed much in the past few years. She was still very pretty, with a tiny waist that looked good in the gold belts and shiny sashes she liked to wear. She took great pride in her hair, changing its style and color to fit her mood. Today, it was a rusty blonde with a matching ponytail woven into it. Accented by bright gold earrings, her black dress and two-tone fingernails made her look much younger than she was. She looked great today, and she was smiling. Gerald looked up at her, but his good mood was gone. He didn't like it when Monique came in smiling. He knew that Monique had probably gotten the job, which meant that she would go out tonight to celebrate. He was proud of her that she had not returned to the drugs, but she had developed a taste for whiskey and was finding more and more excuses to go out and drink with her friends.
"Did you get the job, Mama?" asked Angel.
"Yes, baby, I did." Monique glowed with pleasure. "I'll be answering telephones at the YMCA every day from 9 to 5. Aren't you proud of your mama? I gotta go celebrate."
"That's great, Mama," Angel said, hugging her.
Mama, can I ask you something?"
"Sure, baby, what you need?"
"A lady came to my school today, and she told me about this dance class that I can be in. She said I was really good. Can I be in it, please?"
"Dancing? Probably a waste of time. How much is it going to cost me?"
$50,
whispered Angel, not daring to look at her mother.
$50? Good Lord! Hey, Gerald, has the rent been paid this month?"
"Yeah, Monique, it's been paid. Let her try it, okay?"
"Okay, baby. Go dance your little heart out. As a matter of fact, I may do a little dancing myself tonight. I gotta go change."
Angel grinned at Gerald. She was going to dance. A group from the Dance Theater of Harlem was spending 6 weeks at her school, working with talented young people. She didn't tell Gerald that only 40 children had been selected for the class from over 200 who tried out, and that only 20 of those would dance in the show at the end of the program. She had been afraid to hope. Monique left, humming the latest song. The click of her high heels reminded Gerald of that day long ago, and he suddenly felt a little dizzy. The dishes finished, Angel took Tiger into her room and turned on the radio. She danced with her cat and danced with her dreams, while Gerald wrestled with memories of pain. 15.
Yo, Gerald, you need a ride to the game tomorrow?
Andy yelled across the gym.
Nah, man, I got it covered,
Gerald yelled back. Andy was one of the few boys on the team with his own car. Everybody depended on him for rides, and he loved being the center of that attention. Gerald took the bus to the games. He preferred that to the noise and crowd of Andy's car. He liked the silence of the bus ride to relax him and prepare him for a really good game. Gerald stayed every day after school for basketball practice. It was there that he felt whole and powerful. Rob, who had unanimously been named captain by the team, was tall, skinny, smart, and had the best line with girls that Gerald had ever heard. Andy was Rob's best friend. He wasn't a natural at basketball like Rob, but he tried hard and hated for Rob to outscore him. They had known each other since seventh grade and spent weekends at each other's homes. Both of them lived near the edge of the school district, where houses had neat lawns with trees in the backyard and a fresh coat of paint every other year. Gerald no longer felt uncomfortable around them, even though he lived in an apartment building downtown that had a broken elevator, graffiti on the walls, and very little grass anywhere. Andy and Rob breezed through life, collecting friends and never making judgments about them, with seemingly no problems at all. Last month, after a movie one Saturday night, Andy, Rob, Tyrone, BJ, and Gerald had decided they were hungry, maybe even starving.
What you want to eat, man? Fast food?
How much money you got?
$4.11. What about you, BJ? 69 cents. Hey, Gerald, what about you?
I got about $8.
We rich, man. I got an idea. Let's try that new all-you-can-eat place.
Do they really mean all?
Let's see, man,
chuckled Andy as they headed for the restaurant. They paid for two meals, then went through the line slowly. Andy got 6 kinds of meat, 10 dinner rolls, and 4 pieces of apple pie. Rob piled 8 pieces of corn on the cob, a mountain of mashed potatoes, 18 chicken wings, and 3 pieces of cheesecake on his plate. Tyrone picked up a stack of napkins and a bunch of silverware. They were laughing hysterically, but quietly.
They watching us, man, Gerald said fearfully.
That's 'cause you put jelly on your potatoes, man, BJ explained, laughing.
We ain't done nothing wrong, Robbie said with casual confidence. Let's just eat.
They laughed and gobbled up every bit of that food, smiling at the customers and making even the restaurant workers laugh along with them. When they finished, they cleared their plates, stood on the tables, and sang in perfect 5-part harmony a doo-wop version of the old Drifters song, Under the Boardwalk. Everyone in the restaurant applauded and cheered as they took their bows. An old man with dark brown skin, piercing eyes, and slick gray hair had been watching them from the back of the room. He limped over to them, gave them each a $10 bill, and said seriously,
"Enjoy your youth, my young friends. Tomorrow, it may be gone."
Robbie thanked him, then gave his $10 to the busboy as a tip, and the 5 of them left the place, humming and happy. They ended up with a great meal, a satisfied audience, and more money than they started with. They forgot about the old man and his strange words. BJ Carson, as the team's manager, went to every practice and game. He was short, only about 5 feet tall, but he was tough and strong. He tried out for the team every year, and although he never made it, the coaches admired his courage and spirit. He loved basketball, and his sense of humor and knowledge of the game made him a natural to hang with Andy, Rob, Gerald, and Tyrone. Sometimes taller, older kids who didn't know BJ tried to take advantage of him. They only made that mistake once. Last year, BJ had accidentally bumped a senior with his book bag as he walked down the hall. The senior, a 6'6", 300-pound football player named Dante, had not been amused.
"Who you bumping, punk?"
"Who you calling punk?"
BJ had asserted without fear.
"I'm calling you a punk, your mama a punk, and your greasy granny a punk, too."
Dante was big and grinned cheerfully. He was used to getting his way. BJ put down his book bag, slowly turned around, and tensed his short, wiry frame to face the much larger boy. Dante started to laugh as BJ crouched in a karate attack position, but his laughter stopped short as he found himself sitting on the floor in the main hallway, a calm and smiling BJ offering his hand to help him up.
"How'd you do that, man?"
asked Dante, who was more amazed than angry.
"Black belt, Master Kim, Taekwondo, paid for by my mama and my greasy granny," he added. "Ever need me to watch your back? Call me."
BJ disappeared into the crowd. Dante just shook his head and chuckled at the nerve of the tough little guy with the powerful whip kick. He never bothered BJ again. The five friends had several classes together at Hazelwood High School. Rob, the smartest of them, made good grades with ease. He already had several academic and athletic scholarships lined up as possibilities. Tyrone was more interested in girls than grades, especially Rhonda, who was best friends with Andy's girlfriend, Keisha. Andy didn't make very good grades, but it seemed to Gerald that he just wanted attention at home, even attention for bad grades. Andy's parents rarely came to their games, while Rob's parents never missed one. BJ's mom came to games on nights when she didn't have stuff to do at her church. Even Monique came to the big home games. Gerald never told her, but it made him feel proud. It was Friday after the last class of the day, halfway through 10th grade, halfway through basketball season. It was raining. Gerald headed for his locker.
"What'd you get on that math test?"
Andy asked Gerald.
"Another C-. If I study all night or don't study at all, seems like I get the same grade. I ain't seen a B in a long time."
"Don't sweat it, man. I got the lowest grade in the class. Again. Coach is gonna kill me if I don't get my grades up. And my dad, he'll give me lecture number 57. You know, the one about how he always made straight A's and why can't I?"
"Yeah, man," said Gerald. But he laughed to himself as he imagined Monique giving him a lecture on good grades. She never even knew when report cards came out unless he told her. Rob and BJ chased each other down the hall, racing to their lockers.
"And another B for BJ,"
roared BJ as he tossed his books into his locker. Gerald threw a shoe at him, but BJ ducked.
"Too smooth for you, dude,"
he grinned.
"Who we play tonight, BJ?" "Centerville. Easy win. Your dad coming, Rob?"
"Yeah, he'll be here."
"Can I get a ride home after the game, man?"
"Got room for me?" added Gerald.
"No sweat. What about you, Tyrone? You need a ride?"
"Nah, man. I'm gonna hang with Rhonda after the game," he grinned.
"You need a ride too, Andy? Your car's still not working?"
"My dad said he was coming, but yeah, I'm gonna need a ride. He won't show. Hey, Rob, that math test beat you down, too?"
"Yeah, it was rough, but I got an A. Let's go to Mickey D's and get something to eat before the game."
Gerald and Andy looked at each other and shook their heads.
"What you gonna do, man? A man's gotta eat. Let's jet."
Every day when Gerald left practice, he went by Angel School to pick her up from dance practice. She was thriving on the hard work and sweat and hours of practice. Her face would be glowing when he picked her up, and she came home hungry and happy each day. He had watched her dance once when he got there early, and it gave him goosebumps. She was so naturally fluid and rhythmic that all she needed was the music, and her body did the rest. He noticed that the instructors pointed to her with smiles of admiration. On Friday, she was so bubbly that Gerald thought she'd explode. Her eyes were bright with excitement.
"Guess what?"
She jiggled with joy.
"You won the lottery," said Gerald, smiling.
No, silly. Better than that. I got picked to be the lead in our show next month. I get to wear a costume. Can Mama sew? How will I fix my hair? Do you think I look okay in yellow? That's what color my costume is. Do you think I'll look fat? Where am I going to find yellow tights? The show is in only 2 weeks. Suppose I break my leg the night before. What is the...
Hold on there, sister. You're going to run over me with all them questions at once. Calm down a little.
I'm so proud of you. I knew you were the best.
Gerald hugged her then, tight enough to let her know how proud he was and how much he adored her. Angel half skipped, half bounced the rest of the way home. She was chattering about costumes and rehearsals and the crown she would wear on her hair. Gerald only smiled and let her rattle on. He was so very proud of her, and it made him feel warm inside to know that she was truly happy at last. Her long brown hair blew behind her in the breeze, fuzzy and never quite cooperating with brush and comb. Her eyes were sparkling and full of hope. Something in that breeze made him think of Aunt Queen, and for the first time in a very long time, he too felt at peace. They climbed the 6 flights of stairs easily, laughing and planning for the dance recital. Angel ran through the door, calling with excitement,
"Mama, I'm a star! I'm a star!"
Her words died. She felt as if she were choking, drowning. Sitting on the sofa, cowboy boots and all, was Jordan Sparks. 16. Jordan looked older, harder, and angrier. He smiled, but his eyes stayed cold and unfeeling. Monique was beside herself with excitement. She had fixed Jordan a steak dinner and an apple pie, and Monique was not known for her good cooking. Angel screamed, ran to her room, and locked the door. Gerald, no longer an 11-year-old kid, but a strong, muscular 17-year-old, looked him squarely in the face.
"You ain't staying here. Now get out!"
Jordan didn't even blink.
"Now, what kind of greeting is that for a man who just wants to see his children?"
he asked in that gravelly voice that Gerald hated.
"You ain't my daddy, and you don't deserve to be hers."
"Oh, but I am her daddy, boy, and court says I've been rehabilitated. Court says I get visitation rights. Court says you ain't got nothing to say about that."
"Why you got to come back here and ruin stuff? We're finally almost close to happy, and you show up."
Gerald was almost in tears, but he didn't want Jordan to see him break.
"Your mama is still my wife. She done forgave me. Why can't you?" "I've changed, boy. I'm a new man."
Monique seemed flustered and nervous. Jordan sat silent and staring. Finally, he got up. His cowboy boots echoed loudly on the smooth wooden floor. Jordan paused at the door.
"I'll be back for you tonight, Monique. Wear something pretty."
Monique blushed and tried to hide her excitement from Gerald, who looked at her with disgust.
"And you," Jordan growled at Gerald, "don't mess with me. I'll be back to visit Angel. I ain't gonna hurt her. I ain't gonna even touch her. I told you I've changed. Let's shake on it like men."
He offered Gerald his rough, dirty hand. Gerald didn't move.
"No,"
Gerald stated quietly. He walked into the other room, shaking with fury and helplessness. Gerald wanted to spit. Instead, he just ran out of the room. He knew he had to find Angel. He knocked on her door. He could hear her crying.
"It's me, Gerald. Let me in."
He heard the lock turn, and he gently opened the door. Angel's eyes were glassy and unblinking. All of the pain and memories of the past filled her so that only tears and shudders escaped her. Gerald hugged her for a long time. She quieted down gradually and was able to focus on the cat, which she stroked as she shook with swallowed sobs.
"Is he gone?"
Angel asked nervously. Gerald nodded and sighed. Angel, taking deep breaths, made sure she heard the clink of the lock in the outside door and ran past Gerald into the bathroom. He wanted to beat something, to cry, to scream,
but all he could do was listen to Angel as she threw up the way she used to, the only way she knew to purge the tension of Jordan's presence in the house. Monique, as usual, was no help. She pretended not to notice Angel's discomfort or Gerald's hatred. She was fluttery and excited that Jordan was back and that he still wanted her. Gerald walked back into the living room. Jordan's cologne, which smelled to Gerald like horse sweat, hung strong and overpowering in the small room. "What's the real deal, Monique?"
"Well, Gerald, Jordan is out and,
"He can't stay here."
"No. I mean, yes, I agree. At least for now. But you have to give him a chance, Gerald. He's changed. He's going to try to show you. You got to try, okay?"
"He can never be alone with Angel." Gerald's voice was hard and demanding.
"I think that's a good idea for now, Gerald. Let's see if we can all work together to make this a happy family once again."
"This was never a happy family while he was here, Monique. Your memory don't work so good, it seems."
She smiled weakly, refused to look Gerald in the eye, and went to fix her hair.
Gerald picked up the telephone.
"Hey, Rob, what's up, man? Is your dad home?"
"Yeah, he's in here acting like he knows how to fix a bathroom sink. Mom told him to call a plumber, but no, he's got to prove he's Superman. Now we got to brush our teeth in the kitchen sink."
"Hey, Dad, telephone, it's Gerald,"
called Rob, laughing.
"Hi, Gerald, what's up, son?"
"Hey, Mr. Washington, sounds like you got plumbing problems."
"Nothing I can't solve. All I need is one small piece of pipe."
Gerald could hear groans of laughter coming from the background. Rob's family was always laughing about something, even Mr. Washington's mistakes. Gerald couldn't remember much laughter ever coming from his own house.
"Well, I got some bathroom problems, too."
Gerald paused. Rob's dad waited quietly.
"Angel's in there throwing up again."
"Jordan is back."
Mr. Washington gasped.
"Oh, no. Has he done anything?"
he asked with severity in his voice.
"No, he's clean. So far, at least. He says he's got rights, but Angel is a nervous wreck. She can't live like this. Don't we have rights, too? What can I do?"
"Look, I've got to run out and pick up this pipe. Let me come by and get you. We'll talk."
"Thanks. I'll be waiting out front."
30 minutes later, Mr. Washington drove up in a new blue Buick. He was dressed in jeans and a t-shirt. Actually, it was the same thing that Jordan had been wearing. But on Jordan, it looked sinister and criminal. Rob's dad smiled at Gerald as he opened the car door, laugh marks making walnut brown wrinkles in the sides of his eyes.
"Is Angel okay up there?"
he asked, glancing up at the bleak and depressing apartment building.
"Yeah, she's asleep now, and Jordan won't be back for a while."
"What about Monique?"
Gerald shrugged. "Probably doing her hair for when Jordan comes by later to take her out. That's all she thinks about. She just wants to please him. She doesn't even care or notice how upset Angel gets."
Mr. Washington said nothing, but listened carefully.
"She wants Jordan to move back in. Can they do that?"
Mr. Washington sighed.
"Probably so, especially if Jordan doesn't do anything to get a negative report from probation."
"I heard him tell Monique that he got a job and reports to his probation officer right on time. He even volunteers at an old folks' home once a week just to make it look good. But I know he hasn't changed. I just know it."
"I wish I could be more help, Gerald,"
Mr. Washington replied with real regret.
"Watch him. Try keeping a diary of his activities. It might be important later. Write down everything he does, even if it seems innocent."
"Well, at least that will give me something to do. But what about Angel?"
"Do you think Monique would let Angel spend the night at our house sometimes? She and Kiara really seem to hit it off when they're together. I know Kiara would love to have some company. There aren't any girls her age on our street."
"I don't want to be a bother."
"It's not a problem. For that matter, why don't you come and spend some time with Rob? Maybe after the game this weekend, you and Angel can come over. That will give you both a break from this mess for a little bit, and Monique can spend time alone with Jordan. I know she'll agree if you put it that way.
Yeah, she won't care. That's the problem. She just doesn't care.
The days that followed were tense, but quiet. Jordan stopped by around dinner time and always left by 9 o'clock. On Saturday, he stayed most of the afternoon, going to the grocery store for Monique and even sweeping the living room. He spoke to Angel only to ask her about school or dancing. Gerald watched him every moment, and true to a promise he made to himself, he never let Angel out of his sight while Jordan was there. Still, she was nervous when Jordan was there and usually threw up when he left.
17. That Saturday, Angel went to Gerald's game and sat with Rob's sister, Kiara. They cheered, ate popcorn, and paid more attention to the other kids than to the game. Angel and Kiara, dressed in matching jeans and shirts, walked back and forth to the refreshment stand 10 or 15 times, giggling and hoping they were being noticed. It was the first time Gerald had seen her happy since Jordan's return, and he was glad. Gerald had made several key shots early in the game and felt like he could breathe again. Jordan and Monique arrived late, shortly after the first quarter. Jordan's hard, sharp-toed cowboy boots clomped loudly on the wooden gym floor. People who glanced at him saw a tall, angry black man dressed in black jeans, black t-shirt, and shiny black boots. Monique, overdressed as usual, wore a shiny gold top with tight black stretch pants and black heels.
"He looks like a hit man," giggled Kiara to Angel.
Angel glanced at Jordan and shuddered. She did not laugh. Even across the gym, it seemed she could smell his stifling cologne. From that moment on, Gerald had a terrible game. He was nervous and missed every shot he attempted.
"What's the matter with you, Nickleby?" shouted the coach. "You eating rocks for dinner? Take a break. Smith, fill in for Gerald."
Gerald hated the bench, and he hated Jordan. Jordan seemed to sneer at him from across the gym, feeling Gerald's hatred and laughing at it. Monique seemed uncomfortable. She kept looking at her watch and then at Jordan to see how he was reacting, not to the game, but to her. He glanced at her once and smiled. Monique blushed with pleasure and checked her watch again. She paid no attention to Angel and Kiara. She paid no attention to the game. When the team came back on the floor after halftime, Jordan and Monique had gone. On the way to Rob's house after the game, Gerald was silent. Angel and Kiara giggled in the back seat about boys and makeup and movie stars. He was glad she had a chance to act normal, but even Rob's good humor couldn't break him out of his deep feeling of trouble to come. Gerald knew it was only a matter of time. The night of Angel's dance recital was stormy and overcast, but her excitement made the evening seem almost sunny. So did the garlands of flowers with which the school auditorium had been decorated for the evening. Angel had invited Kiara to the recital, and the Washingtons, since they had to drop Kiara off anyway, decided to stay. Gerald was amazed, but they looked comfortable and relaxed as they chatted with Monique while they waited for the show to begin. Monique was the one who looked agitated and overdressed. No other mother came to the recital dressed in red sequins. She kept looking back at the door, checking for Jordan, who had promised to come. Angel was smiling, but nervous. Her yellow costume and gold crown looked beautiful. Gerald smiled as he chatted with her by the backstage curtains.
"You look like a princess, Angel. You'll do just fine. Relax." "Do you think he'll come?" she whispered.
"I hope not," Gerald replied grimly.
"Is Kiara here? And Rob?"
Angel really liked Rob. He could always make her laugh.
"Yeah, she's here, sitting with her mom and Monique. Rob and Andy went out with their girlfriends tonight."
"Why don't you have a girlfriend?"
teased Angel.
"Me? Trouble is, I like 'em all. I haven't figured out which one is going to be the lucky one yet."
Angel giggled and pretended to punch him. Her teacher called from backstage, and Angel blew Gerald a quick kiss.
He reached out, pretended to catch the invisible kiss, smacked the side of his cheek, and grinned. She smiled at him and disappeared behind the curtain. The crowd hushed, the lights were lowered, and the music began. Dancers filled the stage, delicately moving with the music, filling the room with magic.
"I wonder where Jordan is," muttered Monique, who spent more time watching the door than the stage.
Gerald ignored her.
"Where's Angel, Gerald?"
whispered Kiara, who was sitting on his other side.
Shh, here she comes.
The stage was dark for a moment and silent. Then suddenly, with a burst of golden light and an orchestral overture from the CD player behind the curtain, Angel stepped onto the stage. The story she danced was about a lost child, a child who feared the darkness, but found the light with the help of the wind and the stars. It was as if the dance had been created just for her. As she danced, Gerald could feel her pain. He could see her fear and misery. The music was her voice, and the dance was her only means of escape. When the music finally stopped, the audience reacted with stunned silence. The dance had been so beautiful and expressive. Gradually, the applause grew from very small to a thunderous standing ovation for the little girl who took her bows with tears in her eyes. Gerald was so proud of her, he was about to explode. He clapped so hard that his hands hurt. He cheered, he whistled, he stomped his feet.
"Wow, Gerald," shouted Mr. Washington over the deafening applause. "I didn't know she was such a beautifully talented girl. We're so glad we came."
Kiara, who hadn't really been into ballet, cheered as well, admiring her new friend's talents. Angel was going to spend the night with Kiara after the show. Her parents had promised they could go get ice cream, rent a video, and sleep as late as they wanted the next morning. Monique clapped also, but she seemed nervous and kept looking over her shoulder toward the back of the auditorium. Jordan had not arrived.
"He'll be sorry he missed this," she whispered to Gerald.
"I'm glad he did. It would dirty a beautiful moment for Angel."
"Don't be so mean, Gerald. Hasn't he been a perfect gentleman since he's been out? Hasn't he tried to show you that he's sorry and he's changed? You gotta learn to forgive and forget."
Gerald sighed. Monique would never see, because she didn't want to see. Yes, Jordan had been acting perfectly. But Gerald was sure that it was just that, an act. He did not trust Jordan Sparks. 18. When school let out for the summer, Monique let Jordan move back into the apartment. Angel was sullen and quiet. Gerald was angry, but helpless. Jordan went out of his way to be polite and non-threatening. In the 5 months since he had gotten out of prison, he had not touched Gerald, hadn't even raised his voice. And he had stayed very clear of Angel, speaking to her only to praise her or ask her questions. Monique was extremely happy, for not only was Jordan moving back, but he seemed to be the man that she had always dreamed he could be. Angel talked to Kiara on the phone almost daily, and that seemed to help her depression and concern. She no longer threw up every day, but she stayed nervous and tense. It was hot in the small apartment, and Gerald was restless. He wanted to go play basketball with his friends, but he was afraid to leave the house. While he felt it was his job to protect Angel, he also needed to get out.
"Monique, I'm going to go hoop for a little bit. You keep an eye out for Angel for me?"
"Sure, Gerald, go ahead. You worry too much. You'll be fine. I'll make sure. Go. Have some fun with your friends."
She was watching TV. Jordan was not there. Gerald let Angel know he was going. She looked a little worried, but she told him,
"Get out of here. You can't stay here for the rest of your life looking out for me. I can take care of myself. And besides, he has been behaving himself."
She sighed.
"When I grow up and become a famous dancer, I'm going to move far, far away from here."
Gerald smiled at her and left, dribbling his basketball, wishing he could bounce all of his fears and troubles away. He played for a couple of hours and returned, hot and sweaty, but more relaxed. He decided to take a cool shower and maybe look for a job in the morning. When Gerald reached the apartment, the door was open, and he could see nothing but dark silence. His heart began to beat faster as he tiptoed into the darkness. No sound, no light, no movement.
"Angel," he whispered softly. "Monique."
Nothing. Gerald was so scared he felt sick. If something has happened to Angel, Gerald thought, I'll go crazy. Why had he left the house? What could have happened? Where was everybody? And where was Jordan Sparks? Gerald almost ran to Angel's bedroom, feeling his way in the darkness. He was so afraid, so very afraid of what he might find.
"Angel!" he screamed in fear. "Angel, where are you?"
"I'm over here, Gerald," called Angel's voice. "I'm okay. The electricity went off, and me and Tiger were just sitting here in the dark, trying not to be scared." Relieved, Gerald began to breathe again.
"But where's Monique?"
"Oh, she said she had to get some cigarettes for Jordan. She left just before the lights went off. She said she'd be right back, but she's been gone for over an hour, I think."
"Has Jordan been here?" asked Gerald, just to make sure.
"No, he's been out all evening, thank goodness. Just me and Tiger. I'm glad you're home. I was scared."
"Me too.
Can you imagine what I thought when I saw the door standing open and the lights off? I wonder why Monique didn't remember to shut and lock the door."
"You know how she is when she's around Jordan," Angel replied. "She gets so excited and flustered. He called and said he'd be home by midnight, and he wanted her to go get him some cigarettes. Why can't he go and get his own stupid smokes?"
As she spoke, the power was restored and the lights came back on. Gerald and Angel grinned at each other, just a little ashamed of their fears of the darkness. It was then that Gerald became aware of the sirens. Fire and emergency sirens were commonplace in the neighborhood. The city's largest hospital was just around the corner. But sirens in the distance and sirens right on the corner have two different sounds. These sirens were close. Gerald looked out of their sixth-floor window. He couldn't see much.
"You and Tiger stay here, Angel, and lock the door when I leave. I'm going downstairs to see what's going on. Something has happened on the corner. I'll be right back."
Angel nodded. As Gerald ran down the six flights of steps, his fear expanded like a balloon in his chest. A crowd had already gathered by the time he reached the corner. A tall, bearded taxi driver stood weeping in the street.
"I didn't see her. I didn't see her," he kept repeating. "She was running, like she was in a hurry. She ran right in front of me. I didn't see her. I swear I didn't see her."
The paramedics were lifting the victim into the ambulance. She did not seem to be breathing. It was Monique. Clutched in one hand was a pack of cigarettes.
"Does anybody know this lady?"
a policeman asked the crowd. Gerald's voice at first failed him. He finally spoke loud enough to be heard.
"She's my mother," he said helplessly.
XIX. Angel woke up screaming.
"Mama!"
she gasped. Gerald, asleep in the next room, ran to Angel immediately.
"It's okay, Angel. Mama's gonna be okay. It's just gonna take some time. Now go back to sleep. It's 3 a.m.
Angel relaxed a bit and went back to sleep. She often had episodes like this since the accident. Gerald watched her for a few minutes before he turned off the light. She had grown thinner and was almost a waxy pale. He thought she might need a doctor. What he knew she needed was some stability and a release from fear. Monique had not been killed that night 2 weeks ago. Although most of her injuries were around her face and head, she had quickly regained consciousness. She seemed dazed and confused, but was well enough to ask about Jordan.
"You seen Jordan? Is he okay?"
"He's not here, Monique. He doesn't even know you're here. I don't know where he is,"
replied Gerald curtly.
How'd you get here? Where's Angel?
Monique looked confused.
I'm here, Mama, Angel said tearfully. We rode in the ambulance. Don't you remember?
No. When you see Jordan, tell him...
She faded into sleep again. Gerald looked at Angel and smiled grimly. Well, at least we know she's okay. Are you all right? Angel nodded, but she was jumpy and anxious. When she ran to the bathroom suddenly, Gerald knew that she was more upset than she wanted to admit.